I mean, what's more football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo with my macho man gift. This was the gift from Sam Monson, my partner over here. Thanks,
yeah.
Man.
See, it wasn't weird.
No,
you made it sound weird, but it turns out it was just a t-shirt and some shades.
We've got a macho man, Randy Savage t-shirt and glasses, which are difficult to see through.
Yeah, and as we just discovered from Austin being in the studio, if you're born after like a certain year, completely, you have no idea what we were talking about. Like, this is absurd, has no relevance to anything. You don't know what you are dressed as.
For a specific audience here.
Right.
And, man, you wanted me to bust out the voice. I just don't feel prepared. I used to be able to do a decent macho man.
I just think it would have been.
Yeah.
Right.
Macho man. Now, I lose it after a while.
The intro in that voice would have been good.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
It's the kind of voice you have to commit to it. You can't do it half-ass. You can't, I'm going to give it a try. You got to go all out or nothing.
Yeah.
You didn't have the confidence for it.
I didn't. And I can do like a quick ooh yeah, or a little like snap into it. Like you can do that. But I don't know if I can go beyond that.
Yeah.
So here we are.
It is a shame we don't have the hat now that you mention it. And I'm kind of disappointed in myself.
Yeah, because now I feel ridiculous because don't have the oversized cowboy hat.
You do have the hair for it, though. I mean, that hair is built for a macho man.
Do you know what else Macho Man and I have in common?
No.
Former minor league baseball player.
Of course.
Randy Poffo. Randy played in the minors just like I did. We're basically the same guy.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Randy.
Did he get closer to being drafted than you did?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he didn't get.
But he didn't get passed up 4,500 times.
4,500 times that I got passed over. I'm sure that never happened to the Macho Man.
No.
But thank you for my Christmas present. You can show yours too, because we're trying to get that. We're trying to get that sponsorship, from our friends over at Jeff Ruby's. I got a little because you do a bunch of smoking and grilling and stuff like that. A little Jeff Ruby's steakhouse seasoning.
Steakhouse seasoning. By Jeffrey. There's a nice little story in the back, In 1981, Jeff Ruby developed his now legendary blend of herbs and spices. There's a lot more in there as well. I'm not reading that. But you said that lasted a long time when you bought one.
Yeah, I got almost a year out of it in various forms. Steaks here and there, make some big, like a big roast. I'll be doing that Friday.
All right.
Might be using it again. Anyway, we exchanged Christmas presents. It was fun. And if you're listening, go check out the YouTube, because I'm wearing a Macho Man shirt and glasses. The glasses have to come off at some point. But today, we're going to recap the four COVID games we had in Monday Night Football. Three games removed, extra Monday Night Football games. We've got four games we haven't covered yet, so that should take a good 3.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll preview Thursday Night Football, Titans and 49ers. And do we have emails this week?
Couple, yeah.
And we have emails too. So we got to be tight. We got to keep it tight and efficient for the 1 hour show here.
Yeah. Remember, if you want to send us emails, nflpodcasts@pff.com. Send us ideas. Send us whatever you like. Send us stories. Send us anything. Emails.
We get a lot of stories.
We're desperate. We want a direction.
We're not that desperate.
No. We like the. It's like kids that like to get mail. That's what we're like, except with email.
Yeah, we like. We just
want to see the inbox light up.
So send those in. nflpodcasts@pff.com. All right, let's get into some of the recap stuff here, Sam. We've got Monday Night Football. The first game. Cleveland Browns and Las Vegas Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Nick Mullen show because I'm going to take these off. Baker Mayfield and Case Keenum. Wow, it's a lot brighter in here without the shades. Baker Mayfield and Case Keenum, both on the COVID list. Nick Mullins. Now, I'm going to throw this out there. It might be a crazy take.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nick Mullins is the best third quarterback of all time.
the best third quarterback of all time.
Maybe not all time. I think did the Packers have Matt Hasselbeck and Mark Brunell at one point?
Yes.
Also, certainly.
Also, Kurt Warner at one point was a third quarterback.
Oh, and Kurt Warner was there too? I'm just saying. Well, maybe there's a lot of Nick Mullins is the best QB3 right now.
Yeah, right now maybe. Although, you know, Josh Johnson was a I'm not sure I'd be making that many Nick Mullins. So he came in, he did a job, he was okay.
Raiders win 16-14. I think from a Browns perspective.
Oh, look, there's an actual pick on here. Did we cover?
Picked Las Vegas. Great. Yes!
Beautiful.
We both picked Las Vegas to win by 1.5, win by 2 with the game-winning field goal.
Without any idea who or how many we're going to be missing at the time we were reviewing this
madness. I think last week when we made the pick, we both knew, like, uh-oh, it's falling apart in Cleveland.
We knew that the Browns were in some way, shape, or form hammered by COVID, but we didn't have any clue what the implications of that were.
And we nailed it. I mean, it was an easy win. This is great because we put we put COVID in the YouTube title here, so we've got like warnings about the latest info. Like if we say anything that's labeled as misinformation here,
we're gonna get shut down.
We're getting shut down, right? Because this is we put COVID in the title on YouTube, and
we've probably shown up on a watch list now.
Yeah, censorship is on its way.
Excellent.
We're gonna be censored here, so don't misinform the people here. We did not misinform the people with our pick though. We took the Raiders to cover, and it was easy win. Raiders get up 10-0. Browns crawl back into it. And then, it was a crawl. The entire game was a crawl. Offense this weekend was a crawl. It's what it was. And, they're both 7-7 now. Disappointing for the Browns, and the Raiders stay alive.
Yeah. I mean, this was a game, maybe the first game this season, where, COVID had a pretty substantial hand in the outcome of this, right? Cleveland was in reasonable position in the madness that is the AFC playoffs. Took a big step back with losing this game. And, we're down an awful lot of critical players. Now, to be fair, they had quite a lot of critical players still playing, Like Joel Bitonio and J.C. Treader, two of their starting five offensive linemen, were their two best graded players on offense. David Njoku was still there. Nick Chubb was still there. D'Ernest Johnson has obviously become a big part of that offense, or at least proven that he can step in when Nick Chubb or Kareem Hunt aren't there and basically be the same guy. Rashad Higgins, the legendary Higgins, was still there on offense. Defense did take a bit of a battering as well, but Myles Garrett was still there. John Johnson was still there. Greedy Williams has had a lot of playing time. So, there were a lot of players that were still available to the Browns, in addition to all the ones that they had lost from COVID. And it was a fairly miserable performance from them.
Yeah, that about sums it up. So they both teams have 7 wins. They're both on the fringes of the playoff picture, like everyone else in the AFC. For the Raiders, again, they saved their season. They're dealing with some backups as well. They had a really good game from Divine Diablo, one of the fun. He was a safety coming out of Virginia Tech. He played 34 snaps and played well at linebacker, 6'3", 230.
Ben Stockwell made that point. He's like, how did that guy play safety? He's huge.
Before I was doing football analysis and I was just like a fan and watching stuff and everything, I remember thinking the same thing about Cam Chancellor.
Yes.
Because Cam Chancellor
was also huge.
He was a legit 6'4", 230. And the only thing I knew about the NFL, the thing I knew about the NFL in the draft was like, that's a linebacker body type. Therefore, he'll move to linebacker in the NFL. And Cam Chancellor did not. He was one of the better safeties in the NFL when he played. So Diablo, also coming out of Virginia Tech, similar body type. And
just to put that into context, like that would be a large enough linebacker in today's NFL. Like Darius Leonard, frenemy of the show, is like 6'2". And look, he's listed at 230 or 220 something, but he's said openly that he has played the game at like 215,
right?
220 max. So if you're talking about a guy who's 6'4", 230 something, that guy is 2 inches and 20 pounds potentially heavier than Darius Leonard playing at safety as opposed to linebacker. Like those guys are huge for today's NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. The Raiders needed Diablo's performance. He did pretty well.
One thing, Joel Bitonio, who's been one of the best pass-blocking guards for a number of years, because of all the reshuffling, Joel Bitonio played left tackle in this game and had a 91.5 overall grade, essentially shut down Yannick Ngakoue, who's been one of the better pass rush, like been a really useful pass rushing foil for Max Crosby on the other side of the defensive line for the Raiders. Ngakoue got basically blanked in this game. Betonio gave up one pressure.
Yeah, that was impressive. Yeah, every now and again you see that. The elite guard moves out. We've seen Zach Martin's done it. I remember Logan Mankins was forced to do it. It looks funny, too, because when you have like a legit guard body out there sometimes, Betonio wasn't too bad. Logan Mankins playing tackle was interesting look. But, yeah, it's impressive that guys really can do that, because it really is a completely different skill set, pass protection and
remember,
who you're like, facing. And
Josh Sitton did it once, I think, where Sitton, again, one of the best pass-blocking guards of his generation, had to go out and play left tackle once, and Sitton had like a real guard's body. You know, that was some round type of shape to him. That guy played. And I don't think he went that well at left tackle. So Betonio doing it is legit.
It is, man. The AFC North. The Browns are now in last at 7-7.
They would have been first if they won this game.
A field goal away. And at the end of the game, too, the Browns, they take the lead. They make a stop against the Raiders, and then they just can't pick up a first down. Big stop by the Raiders.
But like Derek Carr kind of throws the game away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did.
Like somebody was asking the question.
Well, he threw a pick. Yeah, Derek Carr throws a pick.
Yeah.
Seems like that's the end of the game.
Yes. Well, could have been. Somebody was asking the question, like, how many times has a guy essentially thrown an interception and had a game-winning drive late in the fourth quarter, you know, in the same game?
Yeah.
Like, Derek Carr effectively threw away the game and then got it back and then had a game-winning drive.
Then had the game-winning drive. Yeah. It doesn't happen often. And the implications are mighty. The Browns would have been 8-6. Tied with both the Bengals and the Ravens record-wise in the AFC North and ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Instead, they're behind the Pittsburgh Steelers in last. Raiders, as I mentioned, also 7-7, have that tiebreaker over the Browns. I don't know if the tiebreaker matters, because there could be 20 teams all with the same record. But it is where's the playoff picture right now?
Have you investigated that? What happens if every one of those teams ends up on the same record? What's the tiebreaker?
All right.
Just draw lots.
Of the 4-7-7 teams, the Raiders are atop that group with the number 10 seed. The Raiders, then the Dolphins, then the Browns, then the Broncos. You want to know why the Raiders are number one? I'll read it to you. Okay. Wins tiebreak over Cleveland and Miami based on head-to-head sweep. Division tiebreak was initially used to eliminate Denver. Las Vegas wins tiebreak over Denver based on head-to-head winning percentage. So a lot of head-to-head just seemed to make that happen. So the Raiders beat everybody, basically. Right? Did they beat the Dolphins? Yeah, they beat all of them head-to-head. So great. Good for the Raiders. They're in the 10 spot. Steelers up to the 9 spot. As of today, if the playoffs started today, Ravens would be out of the playoffs. The number 8 seed.
Yeah.
Right now.
By the way,
the Steelers.
They were, during those games, actually... was it before or after? I think it was before. They were telling players that they had made the Pro Bowl. Now, remember, this is...
We need a tight show. We don't need your Pro Bowl rant.
This was week 15.
We don't need your Pro Bowl rant.
There's 18 weeks. There's three more. There's four games if you're counting that one.
I know, but like other sports do their All-Star games in the middle of the year.
Just saying, at this point, nobody can ever bring up the Pro Bowl as a reason for a player being good or not. Even if the right players were making it every time, right? Which they clearly aren't. Even if that was true, you're actively ignoring now 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I stand with you on that.
Madness.
Don't use the Pro Bowl as examples.
Madness.
Right, working from home. Game? Working from home, actually, is more important than ever now. Optimize your home office with an X chair and our many accessories to enhance your focus, productivity, energy, and comfort. Once you feel the customized support of the X-Chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar, that's the DVL, there's no going back. It's all in the LMX massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X-Chair. With versatile comfort, extraordinary design, X-Chair fits any space, including my office, where I put it all together. High performance, quality engineering, and extreme comfort. That's why I love it. So makes working from home much, much better. You can see the pictures there on the YouTube channel. Go to xchairnflpod.com right now. That's the letter X, chair, nflpod.com. Or call 1-844-4XCHAIR for $100 off your order. XChair is a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. Great Christmas present potential here. They have the big bow on it, right? You make fun of like the Lexus bows. What if you had an XChair with a bow on it? That'd be a great gift.
I mean, the Lexus bow is pretty huge.
I'd get a Lexus Bow, put it on the X chair. It's an even better
gift.
You'll
be able to see the X chair if you put an X, if you put a Lexus Bow on it.
Well, go customize it. Go customize your X chair right now too. XchairNFLPod.com. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description.
And if you're obscenely rich and watching on YouTube, go buy that awesome massage chair because that's hilarious.
Get it, Neil. Go to the next Monday night football game.
Was what that, are we?
Bears-Vikings.
Oh, beautiful.
Bears and Vikings. Vikings win. I turned it off before the final touchdown.
Wow.
What was the final score here?
Well, the important thing is that the lack of the extra point meant that Chicago didn't cover.
Yeah, we both. What was the?
I'm line? Pretty sure the line changed dramatically.
It moved. Oh, dramatic! Right. So we both took Minnesota by 3.5. Nailed it. Nailed it. Minnesota by 3.5. Now the Bears had they were very depleted in the secondary. Final score was 17.
They didn't have a secondary. Like their starting secondary was all out. All of them.
But they got one of the performances of the week from Thomas Graham Jr. Comes in with a 90.7 grade. Only gives up 2 catches for 10 yards. Has 3 pass breakups. 2021 sixth round pick. It was his NFL debut, man. Yep. And it was fantastic. He had a pretty good career at Oregon. So in the loss, perhaps the Bears found something. Let's not overrate one game, but maybe the Bears found a player there.
Yeah, and let's not overrate one game. And also let's not like a lot of that was against players that are not necessarily the best receivers around the world. Like he didn't do most of the damage against Justin Jefferson. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the Vikings didn't have Adam Thielen. So now you're talking about KJ Osborne. You're talking about Smith Marset, Tyler Conklin, CJ Ham, the fullback. Like these are not the best receivers in the world that he was going up against, but he did make some big plays.
Kirk Cousins had he went 12 for 24 for 87 yards through just an arm punt interception. He had two touchdowns in there as well, though. And then Justin Fields threw the ball pretty well, had a fumble in there, still has to do a better job taking care of the ball, taking fewer sacks, but 78 passing grade, kind of like as the Vikings loosened up a little bit in the second half, he made some throws, right?
In the first three quarters, Justin Fields' passing grade was 60, and in the fourth quarter, it went to 85. When the Vikings essentially backed up.
So it was a little garbage timey.
And, yeah. Not so much even garbage timey.
It wasn't garbage time. It wasn't, they're playing prevent, but they clearly changed what they were doing.
Right. The Vikings were happy to play soft enough, let him sort of chew clock and move the ball. And that's when Justin Fields plays really well because, you know, if you give him time and you don't harass him in the pocket and you just let him read things, he can deliver some absolute freaking dimes. And he did that.
I got to vet quickly, though. I mean, this game, and then we'll talk about the Rams Seahawks. I don't know if it's this year more than ever, but the impact of one call on a football game. This particular one was Tease Tabor on third and long. So this was very similar to the Rams-Seahawks game. You know how tough it is to get off the field on third and long? You know, third down in the NFL, you work so hard to get off the field. And so the Vikings have like a third and 18. Throw a little check down. Tease Tabor, you got a blocker in front. It's a lineman. Tease Tabor's in coverage. And Tease goes low. He tries to get around the lineman to make the tackle. And when you first watch the game, it's like, wow, that's an amazing play. He got around the blocker, tackle short, about 5 yards. Vikings should be punting. And they called it one of those low blocks that they've been emphasizing this year.
Can't do that anymore.
But he...
Antoine Winfield's entire career is now illegal.
You can't do that to the... But he didn't do it to the lineman. He went around the lineman to get the tackle. He didn't do it to the lineman. You're not allowed to go low, below the knees, on an offensive lineman. So the rule is, well, lineman's pulling in space or whatever it might be. You can't just go low and cut him, which is a common Antoine Winfield move, to cut him down, take him out, let someone else make the play. That wasn't the intention here. It wasn't even the result here. Like, Tabor kind of, like, glanced past the lineman, like he touched him a little bit, but he was not trying to take him out at the knees.
Touched him.
He went by him and tackled the receiver to make the stop. And it was, what, 10-3 at the time or something? And the Vikings drive down, they score their next touchdown, and they go up 17-3. And look, 17-3 was insurmountable for the Bears. Look, but it's just the swing of a game on one play because the Vikings came back and took advantage and scored a touchdown there.
It does.
And we'll talk about, and I'll vent about the Rams Seahawks two calls later.
Right. It does. You doesn't like talking about officiating.
No. These are extreme cases this week.
Yeah,
extreme cases.
It does feel like officiating. They, it's sort of, they almost used to have the approach of, well, look, you can call whatever you want, you know, during the game, but let's try not to have the call be the reason that a team wins at the end of the game. Now, obviously, it happens, right? The Saints-Rams disaster of a no call on pass interference, they've still screwed it up, but they seem to at least generally try and not have like a game-defining call. Now, they just don't seem to care. It's like we're throwing things weekly that are egregious calls one way or the other, and they're genuinely defining the outcomes of games, and nobody seems to care about it.
I thought the people were on the phone. What happened to the phone line to New York? What happened
That's
to it?
That's still there. You can clearly see.
Why is the New York calling in? Be like,
now.
Do you like? Listen, it's third and long, and it's not a penalty. Stop changing the game. Pick up the flag.
There are clearly a bunch of plays now where like a call goes one way or the other, and then they don't even get to reviewing it. But there's like a huddle. You know, let's just sort of, you know, eat some time, chew some time. The guy's in the ear. He's telling us what happened. And the New York is clearly like, guys, you screwed this one up.
Right.
Call it incomplete and move on.
Pick up the hanky.
Right. We don't have to spend the next 5 minutes reviewing it. This is how it is. There's a bunch of plays where you can clearly see New York is like telling them what to call on the field and then see if somebody wants to challenge it. And yet they're still making a balls of it.
Yeah. It's not great. So,
The Vikings record is amazing, right? Somebody posted this on Twitter. They have gone on an almost perfect sequence this year of two losses, then two wins. So they started the season, loss, and then they screwed up the pattern by going win-loss, and then two wins, two losses, two wins, two losses, two wins. And their final three games of the season are the Rams at Green Bay and then home to Chicago. So there's a pretty good chance they finish the season with the pattern intact of two more losses and then a win to finish 8-9 in the most Viking season of all time.
But right now, the Vikings have the number 7 seed. They're one of three teams that are 7-7.
Yep.
Do you want to know why? Over the Philadelphia Eagles and the New Orleans Saints? Well, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
They win the tiebreaker over Philadelphia based on win percentage in common games, Sam. Wins the tiebreak over New Orleans based on win percentage in conference games.
Mm-hmm.
So over the Eagles in common games, over the Saints in conference games as of now. This is all per ESPN, so if it's wrong, we blame ESPN. So the Vikings right now, back in the playoff picture at 7-7. The Bears are not. They've got they're number 15 in the conference right now. Do you want to know why the Giants win the tiebreaker over the Bears?
The Giants aren't winning a tiebreaker over anybody. Get the hell out of here.
Best win percentage in conference games. They've got
Stop it.
But this is relevant for Giants fans because the Giants have the Bears' first-round pick. And the Giants and the Bears are both 4-10. It looks like the Giants, with a potential GM opening, with a GM opening, will have two top-10 picks in New York. A lot of fun to discuss that this offseason. Anything else to discuss in this Vikings game? You think they're going to lose their last two here? Three?
I think they're going to lose the next two and then win the final.
And then win against the
Bears. And end up 8-9 with a perfect pattern of a season. Yeah.
Feels like the Vikings.
I mean, look, the Rams at Green Bay.
Right? One score game.
Yes. Didn't they break it at some point?
They may have.
I don't think everything has been.
It just feels like they played 14 one score games.
This was a weird, like, the entire Chicago secondary was not playing, and they weren't great when they were playing. So for Minnesota to come out in this game and not just torch them was pretty disappointing for an offense that has talent. Okay, no Adam Thielen, but you still had Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson and an offensive line that was okay. Sure, they were losing to Akeem Hicks at times, you know, and Robert Quinn. If you were sort of watching that and only paying attention to highlights, you're like, oh, Robert Quinn ate Christian Darrisaw alive. The two sacks that he got were the only two pressures that Christian Darrisaw gave up in the game. So, yes, that's not good when you give up two pressures and they're both sacks. On the other hand, it was, 30-something pass plays to give up only two pressures is, let's call it a wash. It's like one of those games where a cornerback only gives up one catch, but it's a 60-yard touchdown. Like, is that good or bad? Let's call it somewhere in the middle and move on. So, like, the Vikings offense should have been significantly more successful than it was in this game.
It had me thinking a little bit because I'm going to investigate this further. Haven't had a chance to yet. I do wonder if, you know, bringing in backups to backups to backups If you do play a lot more zone, if you do, you know, avoid man coverage, you say, okay, we're not necessarily going to trust our backups against Justin Jefferson one-on-one and all that stuff. I do wonder if you can get away with that more, or if in today's NFL, because there's far more zone being played around the NFL than man in recent years, if the cornerback position is slightly less valuable than we considered. Slightly, not massively, but if there is more of an onus on linebackers and safeties in zone coverage now than previously, whether it's in target rate, whether it's in, again, just how often you can hide corners. Because that's what it kind of felt like. It's like, how are they stopping the Vikings in passing situations when they are completely depleted? But they did a good job. And something to maybe investigate a little bit if linebacker might be slightly more important as teams play more zone coverage. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah.
Cool. Want a chance to win the ultimate game day feast, Sam? Great. Yeah, do it. Whether it's football, success, or financial savvy, winning starts with asking us questions. We always ask you to ask us questions. Would you like to know what it's like behind the scenes with Al on Sunday Night Football or with Tirico? You can ask both. How about a need to know for your financial future? Western and Southern's teaming up with PFF's very own Chris Collinsworth, the boss, to share insights that can help you both for your fantasy and financial scoreboards. Every submission earns you a chance to win the ultimate feast to celebrate football's favorite Sunday. We'll cover your catering for up to $2,500, coordinate your order from a restaurant near you, and have it delivered on February 13th, 2022. Is that a significant date? I don't know. It's a Sunday. There's the last football game of the year. That's the date. And don't forget to check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast and Western Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. Submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris. One more time, that's westernsouthern.com/askchris. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, Western Southern, you can rest assured on game day. All right, so then we had, you want to do some emails and then we'll get to Tuesday Night Football, or just do all the recaps first?
So one email, we had a guy email in from Australia, I believe. I assume he's Australian on the basis of his name.
G'day, mate.
Oh, God, don't
that's
do that.
Dumb and Dumber. I'm doing the...
No.
But that's...
Stop. I apologize on behalf of the podcast. I would like to distance myself.
You didn't let me finish the line.
No,
stop. He's in the limo. And
This is anyway from a guy called Lachlan, who was trying to. So remember, I made the point that I thought I could catch one of your pitches barehanded. Like I didn't need the glove. And the reason I thought that is because I played cricket before, and you know, cricket ball, you got to do the whole thing barehanded, unless you're the wicket keeper. But everyone else. And this guy was like, so he had a question about the fourth and one and two stuff, which we've kind of talked about before, so we're not going to go over that again. But anyway, this is in the PS was thing. He says, catching a cricket ball without a glove is easy due to them being 50% smaller than a baseball in size and weighing only under 200 grams. Now, number one, they're basically the same size, cricket ball and a baseball. They're very, very similar. A baseball, I believe, is marginally bigger, but it's like 9 1/4 inches versus 8 3/4 inches. It's like, it's tiny. And a cricket ball is heavier. Like, again.
How many ounces is a cricket ball? Baseball's 5.
Yeah, it's like 5.5 or something. Again, it's very similar because they're basically the same size, but it's slightly heavier.
Oh, you just said, well, actually, to this email.
I did. And so, look, the reason that I was confident in this is because I have both held a baseball and both held a cricket ball. And I've caught the cricket ball barehanded. And I believe that based off your noodle arm pitches, I could catch one of them.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's all I got.
Oh. So you just pulled an email so you can go, well, actually, I can do this.
Just that one, yeah.
What did you say about fourth down decisions?
We've already covered it. There, you see, there you go.
That was in this email as well?
No, that's Tyler just ad-libbing and showing you the size of the cricket ball.
He asked about fourth down decisions and said you can't catch a cricket ball?
No, he said separate. The reason you can is because they're, you know, was it smaller and lighter or something? Yeah, 50% smaller than a baseball. I mean, look, there's evidence in front of you that says that's not true.
Yeah, they're about the same. So I'm sure you can. You can catch me barehanded, sure. I want to see with the glove first. I want to see with the glove.
Oh, definitely catch you. I mean,
what else we have for
emails?
Glove's
not a concern.
Good research. I'm just glad you did your research this week.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Brought some info to the table.
I mean, whenever it's important. Somebody else, who's this? Trevor Harrison sent us in an email saying, I don't know how exactly this would work, but Sam, or all PFF staff, podcasters, cannot use the following words for the remainder of the NFL season. Otherwise, he has to donate $5 every time he can't help himself. The words listed are...
Don't say them.
No, this isn't count. I got to read them out.
Okay.
Absurd, ridiculous, outrageous. I'm pretty sure I've never used that word.
Absurd and ridiculous, you definitely use a lot. Yeah.
Ludicrous also comes up. Insane, madness.
Madness is your...
I don't think
Unless
Sam,
you're talking about the macho madness. Hmm. Right.
I don't think Sam could actually stop himself from using these words. So all proceeds would go to a worthy cause. Trevor Harrison. Now, the problem with not... So I freely admit that particularly the first two, absurd and ridiculous, are used a lot. The problem is you need a synonym. You need other options, right? Because those are things you want to talk about a lot. These are... him doing X, Y, and Z is... What? You need another thing, right?
Really good. Really crazy.
Right. So if you type in, you know, absurd to a thesaurus and are like, right, what else have I got to work with here? You don't have an awful lot that works. Crazy. Okay, fine. But that feels like it's been used to death, right?
A little bit.
Foolish. No, it doesn't. See, then you start to get into very non-applicable ones that are slightly the same but don't quite work. Goofy. No. Illogical. Not really. Irrational. Laughable. Ludicrous. We've already hit that one. Nonsensical. Now... Maybe you could pivot to that occasionally.
I feel like you've dropped a couple of nonsensicals through the years, too.
Preposterous is quite a good one. I think I could get some mileage out of that. Silly? Maybe. Stupid. Unreasonable. And then you get into ridiculous things that don't fit. So I get it. I understand these are some words that are heavily used in this podcast. But my problem is there aren't an awful lot of, you know, happy alternatives.
Yeah. Silly I use with my kids. It feels like a kid's word. Unless you're...
You'd have to hit it. It's the delivery, right?
Yeah, it is how you say it.
Yeah. You could get, him making that catch was just silly. I think you could get away with that. But again, there's limited mileage out of that one.
It's a fair point. I mean, I think I use the word again over and over again. I remember it was Brian Kelly. I blame Brian Kelly. I remember first noticing people using the word again, almost the way they say in Brian Kelly press conferences. And then it kind of became... something I do all the time, saying again. I blame Brian Kelly. Soon I'll be speaking Louisiana.
Unbelievable is a good one. I don't use unbelievable enough. I'm going to create a list of alternatives, right? I like preposterous.
Keep it on the desk there.
And yeah. I like preposterous. I like silly. Unbelievable, I don't use enough. I'll meet you halfway. I'm not saying I'm going to get rid of them completely because there's too many occasions where you need to use them. But I'm going to get a list of alternatives up here.
This is good. You're showing your range here. You know, in one respect, you went, well, actually, I can catch a cricket ball or a baseball. And then the other hand, you're like, sure, good feedback. Feedback accepted. Mm-hmm. We'll get better.
Yeah.
Look at you. Rangy. Anything else you had here?
Rangy. Well, let's get rid of Tuesday's games first, and then we'll circle back.
Let's knock out the Tuesday games. They both happen at the same time. Let's go Rams-Seahawks so I can continue my officiating rant here.
Oh, perfect.
Rams win. And look, they earned it. They deserved it. 20-10. Over the Seattle Seahawks. The two plays that made the difference here in this game, it was 10-10, and the Seahawks made the very difficult get. I'm just mad because Seattle didn't cover.
Yeah.
And I picked them. Now, they made the big third and long stop, right? They make the third and long stop. The Rams are going to be punting from like their own 10 or 15-yard line. It's pretty significant. The Seahawks are getting the ball back. Was it early fourth quarter, late third, early fourth, whatever it was. And, you know, Seahawks feeling good. They got a shot here. Instead, the third down stop gets negated by a holding? Was it they called it a defensive holding on Bless Juan Austin in coverage. They call him Bless. And when you see the replay of this play, all it was it OBJ that he hit? It was a really good, like, little chuck, just knocked him off balance.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, you know, kind of from behind. If you're
just rerouted it.
If you're the back judge, you're watching it. It kind of looked like they got tangled and the arms in there and everything. But when you see the replay, it's just a really good reroute. I mean, it's well done. And it just boggles my mind that this call, which had such a massive impact on the game because it gives the Rams a free first down and it, the Rams come back, and look, the Rams have to then execute plays and all that stuff, and they did. And Matthew Stafford threw an absolute dime to Cooper Kupp. They showed the replay from end zone. It was beautiful. Threw it early, all that stuff. Threw him to space. It was awesome. But, man, this play where Seattle should be getting the ball probably close to midfield, instead the Rams keep the ball, drive down. They go up 17-10, and the rest is history. Seattle could not make the comeback. And then the other play – was the underthrown defensive pass interference. Russ throws it up. DJ Dallas is the receiver. It was Ernest Jones in coverage, the rookie linebacker. Swats DJ Dallas' arms. It's clearly early. I detest the underthrown defensive pass interference. I hate it. I hate that it's rewarded. I should be happy about this, right? Hey, finally, the underthrown ball is not rewarded. But it's just clear defensive pass interference, like letter of the law.
Yeah.
And look, there's hundreds of plays in a football game, over 100 plays. It's not just these two plays. But these literally completely changed the game. One was a fourth down where Seattle's trying to make their comeback. Comeback over because they didn't call pass interference. And the other one was Seattle getting off the field on third and long. They had, like, what's the EPA swing on those two plays? It is massive.
Not just didn't get pass interference, but they then flagged him for being frustrated and kicking the ball away.
For being right about being, you know, not having a call.
Now, okay, you know, you can't do that. You can't kick the ball away. You're going to get flagged, but you can see where he was coming from. You know what I mean? That was clear pass interference. And yeah, like, it was close in terms of being, they use that term bang, bang play, you know? Yeah. That's not a reason to not flag something. Like, if it's bang, bang, by definition, that means they're sequential. One happened before the other. And the first bang in this case was the body of a linebacker clattering into the guy trying to make a play on the ball. The second bang was the ball somehow hitting the collection of bodies at that point.
Right. They happened, but they have, like, at the same time, there was a play this weekend that was called, I think, right. Like, it was slightly overthrown, and so the receiver didn't get his hands on it. And at the time when he would have gotten his hands on it, like, the safety swatted at him, right? So it's like, okay, the timing on that was right. So the timing of the contact is what it's about. It's not about finding the ball. Like, it drives me nuts when they're like, oh, he's got to turn around and look for the ball. It's like, no, you can't touch the receiver and interfere with him when he's trying to catch it. In this case, Jones did.
And then the other huge play in this game was Jalen Ramsey and the Rams defense essentially bust the coverage on DK Metcalf. And for some reason, Russell Wilson just lofts up this underthrown moon ball that never had a shot and allowed Jalen Ramsey to get back into that, eventually break it up. That should have been a touchdown. Like, that was the play you've been waiting for. Ramsey on Metcalf kind of all day, essentially, doing a really good job shutting down anything that was slightly off target. This was the play. Like, something goofed in that secondary. Ramsey sort of bit on the ridiculous gallop move thing that
Ramsey looked like he was expecting safety help, or he just bit. I don't know. He was, but I mean, DK had 3 to 4 steps on him.
Yeah.
3 to 4. It was pretty significant.
Right. Metcalf did this weird sort of horse gallop thing as like a stop and go kind of move halfway through it. I think Ramsey just bit on it, but either way, it was wide the hell open down the sideline, and it was so underthrown that Ramsey was able to recover, elevate, get up, and swat it away. That was a game-defining play that the Seahawks had, you know, independent of the bad officiating. They had a shot to get 7 there and didn't.
Russell Wilson had, again, another game with one of the worst grades of his career, and it was highlighted by plays like that, right? He misses DK Metcalf on the deep ball. There's another one earlier in the game with Dwayne Eskridge where he throws it up. And it's underthrown enough that it became essentially a jump ball, contested catch. But if he laid it out there a little bit further, he would have hit him in stride. But it turns into a jump ball. It also felt like one of those jump balls, like if he was throwing it to Tyler Lockett, he comes down with it. But Lockett's out in COVID list, and Eskridge just doesn't come down with it. Eskridge didn't make a catch on his 4 targets yesterday from Russell Wilson. It did feel like their offense was missing Tyler Lockett.
Tyler Lockett's 5'11". Eskridge is only 5'9". I mean, that's a significant jump ball advantage.
No, Lockett's just good at those things. He just goes up and catches the ball.
That was the one where it was him against Dante Dion, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, 5'11 versus Dante Dion is a huge...
5'7", yeah.
It's a huge height advantage you're dealing with.
Yeah. I'm impressed every time I see Dion play. I love little guys.
It's not even
the height.
You think
I'm a heightist, and I'm over there like loving the 5'7 guy.
The Dante Dion thing amazes me, not because he's short, because the guy weighs like 150-something pounds. Like... he weighs so little relative to the people he's trying to cover that I don't think people appreciate how much of a disadvantage that is. Like, I'm not a big person, right? I'm like 5'11", 180, right? And I have played against people like you, 6'8"-ish, 280-ish, right? When you and I are competing for a ball in basketball, it's just a monster disadvantage, right? There's only so much you can do to offset that physics. like I've played against people that have me outweighed by 30 pounds and a couple inches in height or whatever. And it's massive for, and that's just like, you know, amateur athletics that where this stuff is all relative. Dante Dion at times has to cover guys like DK Metcalf, who has him by like 75 pounds or something. Like, it's insane the amount of size and weight that guy's given up. Like, I've gone up against people that I outweigh by a lot, and they reach a point where they're so small that they just can't actually affect you. They bounce. Like, they don't have the inertia.
How does it actually work?
So for Dion to be able to go up and physically live with NFL receivers in the course of a route, but also come up and like make a tackle on them without literally just bouncing off, is genuinely incredible.
I can't believe Dion has any level of effectiveness in the NFL.
Right.
It is impressive.
Now, it helps when you go, you know, it's easier against Dwayne Eskridge than it is against DK Metcalf. But still, the fact that he's able to do that against anybody in the NFL is kind of amazing.
I want to get to the Rams side of it too, but the one other part about this Seattle offense, like the bomb to DK where he's open deep, and if he gets hit, it completely changes his stat line, of course. But he had 12 targets, 6 catches, 52 yards, only 8.7 per catch. They do take their shots with him every now and again, but it does feel like this offense is putting him into this like Z receiver role where he's going to motion and run little stick routes and run these. I think Seattle had it right in their old system where you run some slants and you run a whole bunch of goes and overs. And man, if you're targeted under 10 yards, it is rare for DK Metcalf. And I just think they're making him into something he's not, almost like playing a Michael Thomas role instead of DK Metcalf's role.
I think part of that, though, was because like they were matching him up with Jalen Ramsey a lot, and it was sort of trying to shift that around versus
I think it's been
game.
All year, though. It's been all year for me.
Yeah, but it would have been interesting to see a game, you know, minus Tyler Lockett without Jalen Ramsey being a factor and see what their deployment for DK would have looked like.
Either way, it was a rough offensive performance for the Seattle Seahawks. The Rams weren't great on their side either, except Stafford and Kupp made some plays. Stafford had an early interception that was a questionable. Yeah, I mean, he threw an arm punt to the safety as well. I don't know if he was expecting the receiver to run a post. I don't know why he would run a post right into the post safety, but it was a bad decision. But Stafford comes back. That throw, the touchdown that was the game winner, the eventual game winner, an absolute laser beam to Cooper Kupp. Thrown into space. Kupp finishes with 9 catches for 136 and 2 touchdowns. And man, he just looked really good once again. And that's without OBJ, you know, only 1 catch for 7 yards. Another pass where him and Stafford looked like they were in different area codes. You know, one of those, let's blame the receiver.
Just going on the list. The OBJ Senior.
Yeah, still the pass with Stafford. Right. So Stafford either underthrew OBJ by 15 yards. Or OBJ wasn't in the right spot on one particular throw, just one particular throw where it was off. Honestly, it looked like the same thing that happened to Baker early in the season, I think against the Vikings, where Odell Beckham's wide open up the sideline and Baker throws it not in the same area code. So I don't know what it was, but the Rams weren't they salvaged it with a couple of these big throws by Stafford, but it wasn't their cleanest offensive performance either.
No. Pretty big game by Von Miller for – right? Like had a sack, had a bunch of pressure, was doing a lot of it against Dwayne Brown, who, you know, as much as he might be declining, is still clearly Seattle's best offensive lineman. So like the Von Miller thing might be paying out.
Also, there was a really nice play by Leonard Floyd in coverage. And I'm a Leonard Floyd fan of the Rams. Big
apologist.
Linebacker. What?
Apologist.
Apologist even. Yeah. But I don't apologize when they pay him like ridiculous money for sack totals. But he had a sack in this game, only 2 pressures on 30 rushes. But it was the classic Aaron Donald gave him a sack play, right? Aaron Donald gets the quick pressure. Russell Wilson steps up right into Leonard Floyd's arms for the sack. I think it was Brock Heward on announcing. Yeah. It was basically like, we need a stat for this. We need a stat for Aaron Donald sacks, creating sacks. We're like, yeah, it's PFF pass rush grade that gets you there.
Well, so, also, he kept using that line like, oh, there should be a stat for this. It's like, there is. It's just not one in the box score from the newspaper in the 1990s.
Yes.
There isn't. But like, pressures are a thing, you know, they show up now.
Right, we do cover this.
Carlos Dunlap, by the way, 3 sacks, They were the only three pressures he had in the game. So he whooped, was it Bobby Evans at right tackle a couple times?
Evans.
Also whooped Andrew Whitworth, who seemed disgusted in himself. Like the fact that he'd given up that sack, Whitworth looked so mad. And those guys, former teammates, he must have
He must have
blocked Carlos Dunlap quite a lot in practice. And knowing how much Whitworth studies tape and studies opponents and stuff, I imagine he's quite just mad at himself that he got beaten by that. But anyway, Dunlap, like, if you again, if you're just sort of looking at the impact, three sacks, has a monster game, looks like, you know, the second coming of Lawrence Taylor right there. The only three pressures he had in the entire game, which is amazing.
Yeah, and Whitworth has now given up only 12 pressures all year, four of which are sacks. And, you know, as I always say, don't judge offensive linemen by sacks. It's just judge them by the blocks that they make. And Whitworth has a 90 pass block grade this year, continuing to be really good. At the age of 40, he turned 40 a few days ago.
Yeah,
officially
he's
40.
Now the only player in NFL history to play to start at left tackle in over the age of 40.
I did see that refuted.
What?
There was a game in 1921.
Come on, 1921?
Yeah.
There wasn't even a left tackle in 1921. That was just all guys on the line of scrimmage.
You can't, listen, we cannot, on one hand, celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the NFL as we did last year and not acknowledge, when we're talking about records, that those 100 years are
Have
in the
you
mix.
Seen that one play that Seth tweeted out? It's just like an absolute joke of a thing where
Can we do an entire segment on that play?
I'm just saying, like, that's the period you're talking about here. Left tackles didn't exist. It was just a collection of bodies at the line. That's no, I'm not having that.
Please just Tyler, if you could Google Seth Galina,
Seth's account
and worst play in NFL history in that tweet. We're trying to make it a point to not like acknowledge what's on the screen for our podcast listeners. But
well,
this,
look, the listeners can go look it up as well. Like, it exists.
That's true. You can go find it.
It's findable.
Posting this play, I want to do a whole segment.
It's got like a million likes. It's not the hardest thing in the world to find.
It's one of those things you really see something new every time you watch it. There's always something new that stands out.
I'm just saying, you can't – that's the period you're talking about here. And you can't drop that play and be like, oh, look, here's our left tackle over the age of 40.
It took me about five watches to find the passer, the roughing the passer punch to the face. I mean, I'm just saying, there's a lot going on that play. But yeah, kudos to Andrew Whitworth for being 40 and playing.
Yes,
playing
40 above 40 now. And no, I'm not. You can't take that away from him. You can't.
That's what we're talking about. Think if there's anything else on this game, then we'll go to Washington, Philadelphia. But first, 'tis the season of giving, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving a Christmas present you won't want to re-gift. New customers can bet just $5 on any of the four NFL teams playing on Christmas and win $150 in free bets if they're victorious. Why not win some green and put some extra jingle in your pocket? What do you think of that, Jesse? If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, your Christmas can still be merry. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings daily fantasy football contest. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win on Christmas Day. And you win $150 in free bets if they're victorious. It's promo code PFF this Christmas at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. I've noticed your friend, Jesse Cofield, there. She puts
My friend?
It's your friend.
Why is she my friend?
You friended her on Facebook or whatever. I mean, Twitter, right? You follow her
I think
on Twitter.
I follow her.
We've interacted on Twitter.
Yeah.
But on her DraftKings commercial, she says official sports betting. She puts the emphasis on a different syllable than I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. So we do it a little differently. Well, I don't know if there's a right or wrong way, but it's open to interpretation.
I don't know if there's a right or wrong way either, but you're sitting here on YouTube and she's on national television every day.
I have way more Twitter followers, though. I don't know if that matters.
True.
But this is the play from 1933. This is
right. So you want to go back 12 years beyond this?
This was 14 years into the glorious NFL history of the NFL. Look at that roughing! Look at that swat to the face!
Look at that passing technique!
It is a two-handed swat. Now, if we're grading this play here, it's turnover-worthy play at the goal line. It's probably a minus 1.5, minus 2 maybe for the quarterback.
Yeah.
Number 9's getting a plus 1 pass breakup. Could be more if he actually caught it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is. And, like, what's 72 doing there? The right tackle.
Well, not much. In fact, nothing.
And they just...
Standing up.
And so the quarterback's probably throwing hot off 35 there, too, because 35 comes in unblocked. So he's got to get
rid
of it quick.
You want to go back another, like, 12 years and claim that there's a left tackle who was over 40
just saying,
that deserves this accolade over Whitworth.
Just saying, 12 years before that play happened.
Stop.
A man was 41 years old playing left tackle in the NFL. Meaning he was born in like the 1880s or whatever.
Yes.
Just for perspective.
Where they barely kept records. Like the guy was probably only 17. Like who the hell knows?
You can't talk. We didn't have birth certificates back then. People didn't know when they were born.
In the 1880s, it was all done by like handwriting. There was like a smudge. Stop.
We didn't have proper birthdays in the 1800s.
You might have had proper birthdays. I'm just saying that like your birth certificate, handwritten using some like charcoal, is probably not worth taking Whitworth's credit away for.
My old teammate went from 19 to 24 years old overnight when they realized what his real birthday was and his real name.
Did it at least happen on his birthday? Because then he could get like four of them out of the way in the same.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No?
I think they just kind of caught him
in February.
And he went from like pretty good 19-year-old prospect to, oh my God, you're 24? Yeah, you're way too old. You're getting released.
That's got to suck.
So yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
Good old Olmo. Love that guy. He's a good shortstop. Washington football team at the Philadelphia Eagles started pretty bad for the Eagles. They kept showing that Dallas Goedert drop. It took me, because I was watching both games at the same time, it took me like a couple watches to realize it actually
took everybody a couple of watches. Like the camera didn't care. The officials didn't seem to notice. The commentators had no earthly idea what had happened. They eventually gave the ball to Washington. And at that point, did the announcing team realize, oh, wait, there was an interception? What the hell happened here?
Okay, so it wasn't just me, because I didn't have the volume on that game at the time.
No.
It was ridiculous.
Nobody had any clue that happened other than Landon Collins, who took off running with the ball.
It was a wide open. The Eagles had a ton of these wide open passes to the flat. Dallas Goedert had two of the easiest drops you'll see, worst drops. One of them leads to this interception. So Garrett Gilbert, fresh off the New England Patriots practice squad. This is why I picked Philly to win and cover. Fresh off the practice squad, starting quarterback, and I mean he did what he could, but you know it went about as expected for a quarterback coming off of a different team's practice squad 4 days earlier. Philadelphia was just too much in their running game. Another game where they're just dominant up front.
I would say it went significantly better than you would expect.
True. For a quarterback. I mean for Gilbert himself, absolutely.
He was signed on Friday.
Yeah,
like,
that's crazy.
They signed him just a few days before this game. I mean, quarterbacks have been signed with like a full week to deal and haven't started because they need to understand the playbook better. Like, obviously, Washington didn't have a choice, so he was straight in there. For him to get through a game like that with, completing 65% of his passes, okay, a low average depth of target, but one turnover-worthy play, I mean, I thought he did all right.
Was he the AAF superstar?
Yes.
Gilbert?
The Orlando Apollos.
Man, I would say.
Would have been the MVP if that league had survived to the point where they gave out such things.
Give me more. USFL and XFL comes back. I'm in. You know, give those guys some more reps. Let us see it. But the Eagles, after that start, and Jalen Hurts also fumbled early on. After that, though, pretty clean football game from the Eagles. We saw an incredible sideline catch by Devontae Smith. Really nice touchdown pass by Jalen Hurts to Greg Ward,
grab by Ward as well.
It was great. I'm saying throws and catches on both sides there. And then the Eagles, once again, just continue to run the ball and dominate up front. So impressive effort.
Look at that offensive line. Like Jordan Mailata, Lane Johnson, both those guys had plays where they were like running downfield. Okay, Mailata bear hugged a guy rather than blocked him. But there was one run down the sideline where Lane Johnson is sprinting, 20 yards downfield trying to spring a block. Kelsey at one point was a mile out in front of a run as well. Deep, like that offensive line is just crushing people.
90-plus run blocking grades for both Mailata and Lane Johnson, as you mentioned. Jason Kelsey, Nate Herbig, like everybody up front, grading pretty well. So the Eagles, I think, are they becoming the team nobody wants to play?
Well, so this was like this is another game where COVID essentially completely changes the playoff picture. Like Washington gets absolutely wrecked, has to start Garrett Gilbert, and they were the team. Like Washington could have still made the playoffs if they beat Philadelphia. They could have even lost to Dallas in the two games, one of which they've already lost, and been fine. This was the game, though, that sort of swings, it changes. It flips that team from being Washington to being Philadelphia now. So, yeah, you're still way more scared of San Francisco than you are of Philadelphia, but the Eagles are back in that picture now because of this game.
Jalen Hurts had two turnover-worthy plays, but again, really clean game outside of that. This was his best game in a few weeks. Of course, he missed a little bit of time as well, but he makes his return and throws the ball pretty well. But again, for January football and the ability, the Eagles just run for 150 or 200 yards every week.
Yeah.
And it is. It's the offensive line. It's the quarterback element of the design run game. Hurts runs for two touchdowns. It's all of that stuff combined, and it's, you know, again, what we had expected, what we would were hoping for, as you evaluated the Eagles coming into the season, this is how they would play. So
Washington had one defender with a PFF run defense grade above 65.
That's rough.
Daron Payne, you know, the nose tackle, run defense grade of 29. Jonathan Allen, their best defensive lineman, a run defense grade of 30.7. Matt Ioannidis, you know, significant role player on the defensive line, run defense grade of 48. Like, these guys that are the strength of this Washington defense just got annihilated by that Philadelphia offensive line.
So I know Hurts, he played a good game yesterday. He had not been playing well in his previous games before he got hurt. He's had a bit of an up and down season, and it's like every time you start to believe in the Eagles, we did a whole podcast on how they were the team. You don't want to play in the playoffs. Right before they had the horrible game against the Giants, and he, you know, had 14 completions and 3 interceptions.
I mean, that should have ended their playoff run, and then this game gives them that back. Like, it resets it.
So all I'm saying is, good win, really nice game from Hurts, nice job by the run game. Got to do it every week now. All basically playoff games and division games here on out for the Eagles and really for the football team. Now, where's the playoff? Where are the playoff standings here? So the Eagles, another one of those 7-7 teams, as I mentioned earlier. They win the tiebreaker over New Orleans, but lose the tiebreaker to the Vikings because of the dreaded win percentage in common games. Win percentage in common games.
Great.
This drops Washington to the number 10 spot. 6-8, just like the Atlanta Falcons. But they're ahead of the Falcons because they won head-to-head. Pretty easy.
Yeah, but I mean, they're done. Like, this game ended their season.
Yeah, because they'd have to jump three teams, basically, to get in. One of which is the Eagles, who just beat them. They'll have another shot at that, though. Anything else on this game?
No, I think we're out.
Do you have any other emails?
Yeah, what have I got?
And then, there's two promo codes that people can take advantage of with PFF.com. So one of my favorites is Elite Up. An Elite Up promo code, which is for all Edge subscribers. What does that get you? The exact percentage here. First off, PFF NFL, you have NFL Pod. That's the one for 25% off any PFF subscription. But if you already have Edge, use the Elite UP, and you get 50% off your Elite subscription. This is a pretty common one. People have Edge. They get a little taste. They want Elite. Use the promo code Elite Up. You get 50% off. It's a great one to get all the best that we have to offer over PFF. And this might be for Edge subscribers. This is probably your best deal of the year. And then the other one, if you're just you want any new subscription, 25% off anything using the promo code NFLPod.
All right. This email is from somebody called John Serrato. He says, I'll admit I don't have any experience as a TV podcast producer.
Same.
Yeah. But how about introducing a new weekly segment on the Wednesday podcast? Segment is Show Some Love. Name suggestions are welcome. This is arguably worse than Big Time Throws. His words, not mine.
What?
Not mine.
Get this guy off my podcast.
I fell down a premium stats rabbit hole recently and noticed a fellow by the name of Jayron Kearse, a 7th-round pick from 2016 that ranks 12th in the safety list in 2021. I thought, damn, that's impressive. Why isn't this guy getting more love? For this segment, Sam and Steve would each uncover a relatively unknown player that's outperforming expectations and explain how or why this player is doing what he's doing. Ideally, we would get some in-depth analysis for how and why. Is this player succeeding because they got put in a scheme that utilizes their talents? Are they finally living up to lofty pre-draft expectations based on college production and or athletic profile? Or is it seemingly random, a la the Bucks Ryan Fitzpatrick at the beginning of the 2018 season? I listen to the podcast religiously, but my pea brain needs a little more structure. Having a segment or two on the Wednesday episodes will be a fun wrinkle that listeners would look forward to. Also, if you guys want to keep the Wednesday show more freelance, maybe you could work in the segment into the review or preview shows. Yeah, that's about it.
I like Jayron Kearse.
Yeah.
It's about time. It's about time. We saw flashes of good play on 271 snaps in 2019. I know that wasn't the point of the email, but correct. I liked the idea of...
I'm glad that you recognize that.
Yeah. I like the idea of highlighting some lesser-known players.
Yeah, I like that as a segment idea.
Kind of forces that we could do a little deep dive film study, bring some to the table.
Yeah.
But J-Ron's a guy I liked in particular, coming out of Clemson, using his size, one of those tight end eraser types. But yeah, he's fit with Dallas pretty well. He's tackled really well, 89 tackling grade, only 3 missed tackles all season, and made a lot more plays with them than he did early in his career with Minnesota and then last year with Detroit.
Yeah, he's always had that kind of ability, though. Like, even in Minnesota, he flashed some skills and looked like a guy. Can I give you one guy that I thought of off the top of my head? Like, I like this idea, by the way. We should adopt this as a segment.
We could definitely do that.
On the Wednesday show.
We could do it, and then draft season, too. We could kind of do the same thing.
Top of my head, Miami Dolphins defensive lineman Zach Sealer.
Oh, yeah.
They, I don't want to say poached, they signed from Baltimore, where he barely played, earlier in his career. And again, this is another guy, 7th round draft pick back in 2018, out of, where he was played?
He was at Ferris State.
Yeah, Ferris State.
Ferris State.
That's where this guy played. So 7th round draft pick. You go to the Baltimore Ravens, pretty crowded defensive line generally. So obviously it makes sense that he didn't play an awful lot there. Like less than 200 snaps, 150 snaps for his first couple of years. Signed by the Dolphins, 500 snaps last year, played pretty well. This year he's going to be in the same kind of ballpark, around 500 snaps. Grade is up to 84 overall, 82 against the run. Just a powerful guy that plays with sound fundamentals, like wins his blocks, doesn't necessarily make the splash plays, the sacks, not even necessarily the defensive stops, though he's got about 30 of them this year. But just like screws up linemen's blocks, and that's what you want from a big defensive lineman.
I like it. I'm not prepared, so I'm not going to bring anyone else to the table. I'll save mine for the next time we do the segment. But I like that as an idea. Good way to highlight the PFF grades. And again, he got into a rabbit hole down premium stats, which you can get for 25% off
or 50%.
Using the promo code NFLPOD. Or if you're an Edge subscriber, you get 50% off using the promo code ELITEUP. And you too can go down a premium stats rabbit hole and find hidden gems like J-Ron Curse. Oh, I forgot we need to preview Thursday Night Football. Man.
Yeah.
I thought we were making good time.
No.
Do you want to do that tomorrow?
No, we can't do it tomorrow.
Tomorrow's a full day.
Yeah.
Titans 49ers. I did forget. I missed the, Titans and 49ers. It's the, congrats. You get a day off between week 15 and week 16. Week 16 is starting tomorrow night. 49ers Titans on NFL Network. 2 days before the Christmas festivities. So what are you looking for in this 49ers and Titans game? 49ers 8-6. Titans 9-5. Both in the playoff picture as of right now. Titans blew their chance at the number one overall seed, or at least controlling their own number one seed options.
Yeah. What is this game in terms of COVID implications? This one's relatively clean, right?
I believe it is. I don't know offhand. We just had the Jets throw 15 players on their
49ers
list today.
Don't have a soul on the COVID list. And the Tennessee Titans have Elijah Molden. That's it.
My favorite player. Molden. Molden's been good this year.
Yeah. But relative to a world where the Jets threw 15 guys on today, that's not bad.
I've seen multiple takes after we gave in. We gave in to the Derrick Henry people. And I've seen multiple people in the last few weeks saying, actually, Titans don't miss Derrick Henry. They miss A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, really. But they miss the receivers more than they miss the running back.
Yeah, look, the Titans have been so banged up with injuries and losing guys that I don't think you can draw meaningful conclusions. Like, our hope... yes, losing Derrick Henry is sad. It's unfortunate. He's a great player. It's a bummer that the league doesn't have this guy for the remainder of the year. But at least we are going to see the direct impact that Derrick Henry has on this offense and how the passing game functions without him and how the run game functions without him and what impact he has on Ryan Tannehill or on the offensive line. No, because everybody else got hurt as well. And like somebody just went into a... a pool of water with a silty bottom with just a giant stick and just swished it all around. So it's just a mess. So you're not getting any clarity, right? All we know is that the Titans offense has gone to hell, but it probably isn't just because Derrick Henry is out. It's probably not because A.J. Brown is out. It's because all of them got hurt.
But they've run the ball pretty well with Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard in particular.
Yeah.
In recent weeks. I think that was the point that was being made here, is that they've had multiple games, Patriots game last week. They've had multiple games where they've at least run the ball pretty effectively, but they haven't put points on the board or enough points on the board, or the passing offense has just been really bad. As in that New England game, Ryan Tannehill has 93 passing yards, gets sacked a couple times. Last week, 153 passing yards against Pittsburgh, sacked four times, including a strip sack. So if they're able to run the ball pretty effectively and Tannehill's not putting up any production, people are just putting, hey, you know, he misses A.J. Brown. And right. But this is the thing. Like, it's easy to say it's the star player. It's also the substitute, right? In all season, we said probably the Titans have the most fragile receiving core in the NFL. Yeah. Top heavy with A.J. They didn't have a three that we really trusted. And they lost both of their one and two. So, as expected, the passing offense outside of maybe, what, the Houston game in week 11, like, the passing offense has just been terrible since about week 8.
They have, and they have run the ball relatively well, but they've also faced significantly less 8-man fronts, right? It's been different. It isn't
true,
exactly
true.
They're not the same defenses that Derrick Henry is running into. So yeah, it's working fine, but it's easier. And it's easier because they don't have the threat anymore of what they need to worry about everywhere else. So I just think this is a bad year to try and draw conclusions about what Derrick Henry means to this offense in any way. It's not a clean comp because of all the other factors that are involved here. The thing that you can look at is say, look, we came into the year saying that if any one of those guys got hurt, do they have the offense that can withstand that? And all of them got hurt. So, of course, it went to hell in a handbasket. Well, the interesting thing about the Titans to me is that defense has massively overachieved. Is that fair? Like, they've had
absolutely
some real concerns in terms of personnel and injuries on that side of the ball, and they've played pretty well in spite of that. Now, the question is, they're the next defense that gets a shot of, here are three or four absolute unique freak athletes that the 49ers are all going to deploy at the same time. What are you going to do? Like, Debo, George Kittle, Kyle Juszczyk, Brandon Ayuk, these guys are all coming to town at the same time. And by the way, they're running behind one of the best offensive lines in the game. How are you going to set out your defense to stop it?
This is where the strength of the Titans defense has been. Kevin Byard, Amani Hooker, two safeties, grading among the best in the league. And safeties have that type of versatility, right? To play man coverage, to tackle in space and man up with a George Kittle. Like, so you might see a lot of that Byard Kittle type of matchup, you know, whether it's in zone, whether it's in man, those are the guys you need to be combating all of those players. Debo Samuel back and healthy, and again, coming out of the backfield and doing all the stuff that they're doing, the Niners over the last few weeks really hitting their groove offensively. And this is what they were supposed to be. So the Niners are the team they're the hot, you know, hot commodity playoff caliber team that you don't want to play and all that fun stuff. And I think that's what's going to end up being the difference here. What's the line on this thing that I haven't even...
I think it was 3.5 last time I checked. I
haven't checked yet. Yeah, we got 3.5. Niners by 3.5 at Tennessee here.
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo also, you know, once again, playing pretty well. Had a good game last week. And I don't know. The Niners, and the Niners also look better defensively, much better defensively than they did early in the season. So there's just a lot trending in the right direction when it comes to the 49ers right now.
There is. That, I think, is a really underrated part of this whole thing. Like, everyone's focusing on that 49ers offense for good reason. The freak athletes that we talked about, Jimmy Garoppolo not having a bad game since they basically were like, ah, I mean, I guess he's the starter.
And that was all the way back in week 8,
by
the way. I'm sorry, week 7.
It's
week
half
7
a season
was when that
at this point of, like, pretty good Jimmy Garoppolo play. And the funny thing is, he was playing, like, such crap to begin the season that even with almost half a season of pretty good play, he's only been able to crawl his way up as high as 15th in the PFF ranking. So, like, that's how low a starter base he was coming from. But, yeah, that's significant. So the fact that the offense is getting all this attention is real, but it kind of masks the fact that the defense has been on a tear, particularly up front with Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead and those guys, like, absolutely ripping offenses to pieces the last few weeks. And, you know, the Titans offensive line is not the best in the world, particularly pass blocking.
I just want to highlight too, for the EPA folks out there, the people that use EPA to evaluate offenses and then, you know, attach it to a quarterback name, where Jimmy Garoppolo's expected points added number is fantastic this year. The reason why I think Kyle Shanahan gets so much should deserve so much credit, and the Kittles and Samuels and Ayuks of the world now deserve so much credit. Jimmy G's big time throw rate is at like the same spot it's been since he joined the 49ers, in the twos, which is really low. He's got 9 big time throws all year. That's 2.3% of his dropbacks. That's a very low number. One of the worst in the league, lowest in the league. He's almost got twice as many turnover worthy plays, Jimmy G. I know most of those were earlier in the year, but he's had a few in recent weeks. But my point is, for this offense, year after year, to be one of the most efficient passing offenses in the league without a quarterback making special throws. And remember, this was Jared Goff with the Rams last year. Low big-time throws, good offense overall. It means you're creating yards after the catch. You're creating open throws. Or you're relying on playmakers and great play calling to make plays. And that is just where the Niners are right now, with all of their playmakers, with the play calling, and then the unique ways that they keep defenses off balance, such as putting the great Deebo Samuel into the backfield as a running back to create mismatches. So just wanted to highlight the Shanahan, Kittle, Deebo effect here on a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, who's not making a ton of special throws, but he's making enough good throws, good throw after good throw after good throw, but stuff that's schemed up and open, and the Niners are doing a really good job all around offensively right now.
Dude's averaging eight and a half yards per attempt. It's the highest in the NFL.
Yeah, highest yards per attempt with an average depth of target of 7.8, one of the lowest in the NFL, meaning something's working right beyond the quarterback.
He's also another guy that has that, you know, we talked, if you go to the PFF NFL Daily, we essentially answered how Joe Burrow can now be the number one graded quarterback in PFF despite leading the league in interceptions. Like, that's not something that usually tallies. And part of it is because Burrow's interception to turnover worthy play kind of ratio is a little out of whack relative to what most quarterbacks are. Garoppolo might be the most extreme example that I've ever seen. Jimmy G has 18 touchdowns and 8 picks, but 9 big time throws and 17 turnover worthy plays. It's like the ratio is flipped. It's reversed.
It is. It's pretty funny. And again, that's over the course of the season, because he went through a stretch through week 7. He had 1 big time throw and 10 turnover worthy. So he's been much better in recent weeks. It's just the whole body of work is a little disjointed when it comes to Garoppolo. But he's in a much better groove, where he's playing now much closer to what he was in the Super Bowl run. And then remember, right when he got to San Francisco in 2017, he was really good down the stretch.
I would argue that this run is the best run of play he's ever had.
Yeah, and again, sometimes it goes unnoticed. I said again. It goes unnoticed because there was a rough patch at the beginning, but when you put it back to week 8, it might be the very best run.
The 49ers have essentially become the team, like, a lot of, they were, I think, third in Super Bowl odds preseason. Like, it was the Bucks, the Chiefs, and then I think some places, not everybody, some places had San Francisco as the third most likely team to win the Super Bowl. They have become that team after stumbling the hell out of the gate and making everyone look ridiculous that thought that was true. All of a sudden, this run, like, that's the team we're talking about here.
It is. And then the other guys to watch, I'll just highlight Trent Williams every single week. Watch him. Nick Bosa, both guys balling out, playing really well. Niners are looking. It's more than just, you know, generic TV analysts speak that you don't want to play. They are a really good team. I think they're as good as the Rams or the Cardinals or the other teams that have better records. They just don't have as many wins as those teams.
Yeah, look, you were concerned about covering that game. We're done. Easy.
We did it. I'm going to take the Niners, man. I'm taking the Niners trending to cover the 3.5 here at Tennessee.
I'm already on record on, I think, Syracuse Radio this morning taking the Niners with that spread.
Oh, yeah. So you just can't. I mean,
I'm pot committed at this point.
You are. Folks in Syracuse will hold you to that. So
they already do. I shudder to think, like, they send me this text every week, you know, like, here are the games, text back your picks. They're running some, like, season long, you know, pick thing. I shudder to think what my record is on that thing. They've never told me, and I've never asked.
Just type it in quick.
Yeah, right? It's like I just fire in the thing, send them off.
And you definitely have, like, 30.
They're tallying it somewhere. I've never, like, checked or asked, or they've never brought it up. I would imagine it's god awful, but.
You know, I would imagine.
Out there somewhere is my horrendous record in the Syracuse Radio every week.
Well, we're both taking the Niners, and we'll forget it next week because I always forget the Thursday games. And there it is. We're on to week 16. Now, this was our midweek show. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to preview all of the Week 16 action. It's a full slate, no more buys, and got a lot to break down here Christmas week.
Yeah.
And thanks again for my Christmas gift.
You're welcome. Thanks for this one.
Yeah, you got it. And thanks to everybody for tuning in. And are we still doing the GoFundMe?
Yeah. It's my pinned tweet. It is the podcast Twitter's pinned tweet, which is at PFF NFL Pod. The pinned tweet, we are donating to raise money, or we are to GoFundMe to raise money for the tornado relief that swept through the Midwest. So a topical, acute need for people. We will figure out this forfeit, this punishment thing is not going to be the greatest one we've ever done because this is a quicker thing, and then we'll fire up something else after that.
Sorry about that. Hit the mic. Anyway, go check it out at PFF underscore Sam and his pinned tweet. Over $1,700. Appreciate everybody for being a part of that. And we'll be back tomorrow for the Christmas episode previewing all the Week 16 games. See you tomorrow.